The Guardian.
I'm Dan O'Sara. I'm a professor of chemistry at MIT, and I'm the Henry Dreyfus Professor of Energy also at MIT.
Daniel, you're using chemistry to look at ways of producing renewable energy. Can you link those two things up for us?
In a general sense, why chemistry? And I really firmly believe that's the science that will solve this energy problem. And it's really easy to understand. When you burn a fuel, you take gasoline, you burn it with oxygen, you make CO2 in water, and then you get energy out. Well, when you're burning that fuel, what you're doing is you're taking the carbon and carbon-hydrogen bonds, that's what composes a fuel, and then you rearrange those bonds with oxygen to make CO2 and water. And there's the answer. I said you rearrange bonds. So physicists deal with things inside the nucleus of an atom. Chemists deal with things outside the nucleus, the stuff that sticks them together, bonds. And so the whole energy problem is a bond rearrangement problem. And once you start talking bonds, you're talking the currency of chemists. So that's why chemistry will solve this problem, and it's got to be the central science of this problem. It's intrinsic. Now, that's for the fuel part. There's also capturing solar light and converting it finally into fuels. That is a broader problem. It involves physics. This is the photovoltaic part of the problem. But again, centrally, it involves chemistry because we have photovoltaics at work. They're too expensive. The way you're going to get that into the market is discovering new materials. And chemists are sort of the cooks of science. We make new materials.
The photovoltaics being the sort of usual solar panels that people are used to which generates electricity. But can you tell me what kinds of projects you're working on in your department?
When we think about the energy problem, and it's a little bit complex, but I'm going to break it down so it's really easy. There's three components. The type of renewable energy I'm interested in is using sunlight and storing that energy for us to use. And so that renewable energy, I'm solar power. Now, when you start thinking about solar energy, you feel it every day. That just goes into heat. So what you need to do, here are the three components of solar energy. You got to capture the sunlight, and then you got to convert it from light energy to another form of energy. The easiest form of energy is to convert it into an electrical current. But this is a little different electrical current. This electrical current isn't the type you're used to plugging into the wall, because that electrical current runs through wires. Same type of current, but it's wireless. So here's the first two parts of the solar problem: capture and conversion. Capture the light, convert it into wireless current. That's what a photovoltaic does. But at the end of the day, for the problems I'm worried about globally, you need to store that energy. So you got to store that energy in some form. There's basically only two ways to store that energy. One is in chemical bonds. Now we're back to that chemistry thing. That's what I'm interested in. In fuels. That's what a fuel is. So we'll take that electrical current and then store it in a bond rearrangement to make a high-energy fuel that we could use some later time. Or the other thing is in a battery. We could just keep that electrical current stored in a battery, and then at night you could use the battery. So those are the two areas that people are looking at right now. I'm in the fuel storage, and that is a code word for photosynthesis, artificial photosynthesis. So when you hear the word artificial photosynthesis, it's exactly what a plant does. The leaf absorbs energy. It actually sets up a wireless current, leaves a buzzing with electricity. Nobody realizes it. And then it takes that wireless current and it stores it in fuels. And you know those fuels. Oxygen is one. And then it actually makes hydrogen initially, a solid form of hydrogen. And then it takes that hydrogen and combines it with CO2 and stores it in sugars and starches, what you eat. So that's what artificial photosynthesis is: capture, conversion, and then storage in fuels.
I'm assuming that your artificial photosynthesis doesn't produce glucose and sugar and things like that. So what are you producing at the end of it?
We could do that. So now you're getting to a touchy subject in the renewable energy game, and that is, when you do photosynthesis, the first thing that photosynthesis does is it stores energy in oxygen and hydrogen. a solid form of hydrogen, though, not gaseous hydrogen. When I do my business, what I'm going to do is I would like to make a catalyst. This is the thing that will take the wireless current and then act on the water and also make hydrogen and oxygen. But my hydrogen's gaseous, because when you split water, you have to get gaseous hydrogen and oxygen. And so the next question is, do you want to use that hydrogen directly? You hear that argument all the time. It's a gas. Or maybe I would want to kind of do what photosynthesis does and take the hydrogen and combine it with CO2 and make a fuel, a liquid fuel, not a sugar or starch. I don't have to go that whole distance, but I can go partway. Partway would be an alcohol. So when I do my business, I split water to hydrogen and oxygen. That's good enough fuel, and you can use fuel cells. That's what fuel cells do. It combines the hydrogen and oxygen and extracts the energy out again. I could use that as a fuel, but because of the problems of a gaseous fuel source, you might want to take that hydrogen and make a liquid fuel out of it. But the important point is there's no escaping hydrogen, because if you're going to use water plus sunlight as your fuel source to rearrange the water bonds to make hydrogen and oxygen, I have to deal with hydrogen up front. I might need to do something with it. I might not want to use it as a primary fuel. But in my business, there's no avoiding it.
How efficient is the mechanism that you've developed, this splitting of water into hydrogen and oxygen? Can you give me a sense of how much energy is released and how much energy you can store?
Yes. So that's a really great question, because at the end of the day, this energy storage and efficiency is where it's at. So let me tell you something comforting. Science has made a artificial cell, photosynthetic cell. It works. It works at around 18% efficiency. So I can take sunlight in, I can convert it into hydrogen and oxygen at an overall 18% efficiency. So then you can say to me, well, why aren't we using it? And the reason is it's way too expensive. The materials that science has used to do this are so expensive, it could never penetrate the market. It's never going to be practical. The good news is, though, there's no showstopper. We know we can do it. So the next question is, can we do it more cheaply? That 18% number is plenty good to run the Earth's, or power the Earth. So the next question is, can we power the Earth cheaply? And that means we're going to have to discover new materials that replace the expensive materials, and then do the same sort of fuel forming reactions we've been talking
about.
So back
to the chemistry, making new materials.
Yep. And so there again, we're right back to chemistry. And I'll also broaden it. We can have material scientists and some physicists, condensed matter physics, people who make new things. But the whole energy game is new reactions to do fuel forming reactions and new materials.
The study is now engaged in finding these new materials, in lowering the cost. Is it going to be done in time to sort of meet some of these renewable energy targets that the world is setting?
That's the worry. Can we act quickly enough? Because this is a ticking clock. We're filling the atmosphere with CO2, and we need to start cutting the tie between our energy use and carbon dioxide. And that means I have to cut the tie between coal, oil, and gas and energy. And so I have to replace coal, oil, and gas. We're not going to do that instantaneously. So as we continue to fill our atmosphere with CO2, the question is, can science come up with the discovery quickly enough to start replacing that carbon-based fuel supply with a renewable-based fuel supply? I believe we can do it, but that's not going to be enough. Nobody, if science discovers it, nobody is going to use it, because this is a huge train, the oil, gas, coal train, and you're going to need a big blow to knock us off that track. And it's, the discovery won't be enough. We're going to need policy to make us move that way, so that we will avail ourselves of the discoveries we're making in the science.
the use of hydrogen is sort of touted as one of the sort of the big holy grails of renewable energy in the future. So hydrogen cars, hydrogen to produce electricity, yep. and so on. So what you're doing is going along that road. Are you confident that it'll be something we will be using, or do you think that hydrogen will be a part of many different sort of fuel sources in the future, whereas right now we'll rely pretty much on fossil fuels? In the future, we'll rely on photovoltaics, hydrogen, all sorts.
Yeah. So the photovoltaics deliver the electricity, but for a fuel, we need to rely on hydrogen. What you're asking in a subtle way, though, is will our technology grow up around hydrogen gas, hydrogen fuel cells, or will we fix the hydrogen with things like CO, carbon monoxide, or carbon dioxide to make a liquid fuel? I think the jury's still out on that one. But again, you can't avoid the hydrogen question because the code word for hydrogen in my research is water. So water plus light equals hydrogen plus oxygen. And if I want to have water and light as my fuel source, which is what I want to do, I want to take the light energy, solar energy, and store it in water, but not water itself. I'll use that energy to rearrange the bonds of water to make hydrogen and oxygen. That's a fuel. And if I want to do that reaction and use water as my fuel source, which is really the holy grail, because when that recombines hydrogen and oxygen, you get water back again, totally non-polluting, sustainable. And it's a closed system. So if I get a gallon of water and I can split it to hydrogen and oxygen, I can reuse it and get water back again. So you're not using water as a resource. You take 1 gallon and you can go a long way with it. So if I'm going to do that, I need to deal with the hydrogen. There's no escaping it if I want water to be my fuel source with light as an input.
But you're convinced that hydrogen is going to be the main renewable fuel source?
I'm convinced in the long run, water should be the fuel source with light. You'll make hydrogen, but the technology, we might decide as a technology, using hydrogen directly is too complicated. So we might want to take that hydrogen and combine it with something else and make a liquid fuel and then use the liquid fuel like we already do in our society. That part I'm not sure about. But initially, you need to get the hydrogen. Once you have the hydrogen, you can decide whether you want to use it directly or indirectly. Because when you split water, you got to make hydrogen and oxygen. Then the question is, what do I do with the hydrogen? And you're asking me, am I convinced I'll use it directly? Not sure, but I need to take that hydrogen and then use it indirectly by combining it with CO2 to make a fuel.
Well, do you think that the hydrogen end of it, which is water or hydrogen, whichever end you want to use it, is that going to be the main thing? Or do you think that the others will have a similar role?
Yep. This is becoming more and more a common expression in the field. There's no silver bullet. So will it be solar using water as a fuel source? That might be a silver bullet. Silver bullets are, there's one type of bullet. People rather say there's a lot of silver pellets instead of a bullet. And in the near term, we're going to need lots of other energy sources. We always want them to be renewable. There's no question with that. So what are renewable sources? Wind, wave power, geothermal. These are all sources that don't produce CO2 and are renewable. Geothermal, once you tap a well, you'll finally deplete the energy. But heat transfer from the center of the earth will finally warm the well up again. So you may have to go away for a few years and then come back. But geothermal is a renewable source. Non-carbon is also nuclear. So when you start looking at the full scale of things, there's biofuel, nuclear, wind, wave, geothermal. We're going to be using all of them, because the need for energy in the next 50 years is going to be so great, no single source can deliver that need for energy individually. So we're going to need the whole fabric of energy sources that are non-carbon. Ultimately, the sun does have enough energy to deliver us our full energy source. In answering your question, near term, we'll be using a lot of different sources because sun still is too far off to be economically viable. When we finally get the sun on board in an economic way, we can probably just go with a solar-powered society. But that's further off in the distance, and we can't wait that long.
Give me a time scale for that.
I'm confident because, like I said, there's no showstopper. It's just the discovery of new materials and new ways to do things. I believe with a committed effort, science can deliver a large, basically solve the discovery and technology problem in under 20 years. I have no question about it. But that's not enough. Then the next issue is how fast does it get implemented? That's out of the scientists and technologists' hands. And that's the will of the people. Also, there's a technology or engineering issue. We got to redesign our society to be solar powered. So that could be another 10 years. So when you're looking at, or 20 years, so when you're looking at the full picture, I might be looking 40 years off for the discovery, technology, and then implementation. So that's why we can't wait. We cannot wait for 40 years as we fill our atmosphere with carbon. So in the meantime, we better use things we're pretty good at, and that's going to be biofuels. It might mean nuclear. The French have shown us that nuclear can work in terms of not making CO2 and sustaining an economy. And it might be wind and geothermal, and that will all be local. So off of the coast of England, wind makes sense. But there are other places in the world, wind makes no sense, but there could be geothermal. So we're going to need this silver pellet approach.
But you're optimistic that energy problem can be solved and our carbon emissions can be brought down.
I'm optimistic that we have the know-how. Am I optimistic that we will act in time? Not sure. So we need to start changing our society now to start doing what you say. There are things we could do, but nobody's had enough guts to do them yet. So one thing is to price carbon. If I made carbon expensive, you would drive companies to come up with whole new ways of doing business. And I really believe in the private sector. So, but you're going to have to force them because oil's pretty cheap. So they're going to keep using oil. So you're going to have to nudge them to finally go in a different direction. If you make carbon expensive for them, they will come up with amazing new discoveries and technologies and innovation and start doing things more efficiently. So we need to start doing that. And I'm talking about the private sector and industry. Let's talk about myself. If carbon's priced, I might think about what type of car I buy. Do I drive as much? So if we price carbon, our entire society would reevaluate how we use fossil fuels and we would become more efficient. That could buy us time. The efficiency side could buy us time for the science and technology to deliver what we need to finally cut this tie to fossil fuels.
You say the situation at the moment is that we need better materials to make it cheaper to use. When that does happen, say 40 years time, and it's in use, how do you envisage it will be in use? Is it going to be big power stations? Is it going to be sort of home generators?
I think we can do this in 20 years or less. The beautiful thing about solar is it's a distributed energy source. So there may not be need for the way we do energy generation now, which is we do it in one spot and then we have to distribute it through power lines. So if this world works the way I envision it, the person in a little village in India will be generating energy at his and her home in that little village, just like some big company in the Western world will be generating energy.
Using a little solar cell of their own.
Solar cell, and then that solar cell will be generating a fuel or powering a battery during the day. They'll be bleeding a little bit of that energy off to use directly, electricity and whatever they need during the day. And then they'll be pushing another piece of it towards storage. They'll be generating hydrogen and oxygen, or they'll be storing it in a battery. And then when the sun goes down, they'll just flip a switch, and that will come on board. And you can imagine, I mean, I can imagine without being too futuristic, that you start building your home so that you have a home and you, during the day, the tiles on the top of the roof and the sides are photovoltaics. It's generating your electricity, all your appliances, all the sockets. You don't need a power line to a station. It just has to get to the roof and the side of the house. And then you're in the basement of your house, you're generating either fuels or you're charging a battery. And then the night comes, you flip the switch, you turn on the battery, or you start recombining the fuels, you get the energy out, and you car, when you drive into the garage, you just plug it right back in and you start recharging your battery for your car. And then in the morning, you open the garage, you leave. So this isn't very hard. I mean, if we have the sun and we harness it, we could very quickly build self-contained living structures that are totally powered by the sun.
Imagine all of that working in Florida, but North England, in Manchester, for example, where there's very little sun most of the year. What would happen there? How much sun do you need?
So that's why, so now you're hitting on a really important point, which has escaped the public's attention. Because you always hear PV, PV, PV. PV, PV, PV generates electricity, and it only generates it when the sun is out. So that's why you need the storage part. So if you're up in Manchester, you might not be generating as much electricity during the day because of the clouds, but we could then ship a fuel to the people in Manchester from more sunny parts. And so that's why you need the fuel storage, so that when the sun isn't out or in the cloudy areas versus the Arizona deserts or the Middle East deserts, that energy would be available to people. That's the key to needing storage. So once you get to these large global energy systems, it's impossible just to do direct energy, which is PV. You need the storage part.
Would you imagine deserts like the Sahara or Arizona being sort of harvesting fields for solar energy?
Yep.
It could be distributed everywhere.
Yep. That, I do imagine that. That then gets back to a kind of centralized power generation. So I think that will supplement the world I see. So at your house, you generate whatever you can with whatever sun you have. And then you might have to have more centrally located spots where you're generating, because there's a lot more sun there, and you're collected, and you generate a fuel or you store it in a battery and then ship it to people. So I imagine that sort of mixture, but it would all start at your home first or where you're living first. And then we would use these other places to supplement our energy needs.
Everything we've talked about is a kind of a technological fix to climate change. There's a little danger in that because if people think that technology is going to get them out of this, then we'll carry on using lots of energy.
That's right.
And so on. But is technology going to save us from climate change?
I've done global energy calculations, and I'm just going to give you numbers, and you don't need to fully understand where they come from. But right now, the world uses around 14 terawatts. A terawatt is a trillion watts. So in the world, we're using around 14 terawatts. In the year 2050, we're going to be using 28 terawatts to 30 terawatts, double the amount of energy we use now. That calculation is predicated on unprecedented conservation. At least 90% of the energy we use now, we're going to have to conserve just to get to a doubling. So the technology I'm talking about is to take care of a doubling with unprecedented conservation on your part. And we're going to barely do it. So there is no out here. You're going to have to be the most responsible person in society in the world in terms of your energy use. And then you're going to have to rely on technology to fill it in. If you totally ignore, if you just say technology is going to save us, it's not going to be around 30 terawatts. It could be up around 50 terawatts, 45 to 60 terawatts, which there's no way technology can deliver. So it's going to take all parts of our society coming together and working on this. And that's a great thing. That brings people together. And it's going to have to be everybody. People in China, India, U.S., England, we all have to get in the same boat and start taking care of this problem, because it's our Earth that we're going to kill. I want to say, we will not kill the Earth. I always tell people, I always worry about the planet. I want to assure you, no matter what we do, the planet is going to be okay. It's going to be the people living on the planet that's going to be in trouble.
It'll kill us.
Yes. The Earth, if we get annoying enough to the Earth, you can think of it like having an immune system. If we get so annoying to the Earth, she'll just kill us like any virus or bacterial infection, and she'll be fine. So we don't want to become that irritating. And we're, with the amount of CO2 we're putting into the atmosphere, we're getting irritating enough to the Earth that she could kill us off. So the Earth's going to be fine, though. I just want to assure everybody, it's the people on it I'm worried about.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.